Welcome back to the Into the Void podcast. I'm your host, Scott Ferdella. Before we start, each and every episode of the podcast is brought to you by Southpaw Cat Cafe, Kingston's first and only cafe where you can sit and enjoy a coffee or dessert in the company of playful, adoptable cats. If you don't know, now you know. There are currently six silly cats at the cafe, including maybe the prettiest cat we've ever had, or certainly in the running. Her name is Mango. She is a young flame point Siamese with derpy eyes, and she's wonderful. So check us out on Instagram for more at boxing.cat. And in the future, listeners of the podcast will get exclusive deals on merch, so stay tuned for that. Actually, speaking of which, we have pinback 1.5-inch buttons coming in hot very soon, within probably the next 10 days. They'll be exclusively for sale for now at the cafe, and I'll let you guys know when those are available. Now, on to the fun stuff. My guest today is Danielle Folkerts, aka the Traveling Artisan. Danielle is an artist, obviously, and an entrepreneur. She teaches workshops, she scuba dives, and travels all over the world. She's a super interesting person. So we're recording on Thursday night and releasing probably ahead of schedule because Danielle has a show this weekend, so she would have been busy. We touched on a lot of interesting subjects tonight. Some were a little controversial. Hit me up on Instagram and let's chat like civilized humans if you agree or disagree. I'm a person that changes their opinions in light of new evidence or more compelling arguments. So change my mind, people. Not that it necessarily needs changing. I'm just saying. I'm open. Anyway, let's get to it. This episode was a lot of fun. Danielle is a great podcast guest. She's very chatty. And she was actually my very first podcast guest in an unpublished episode before I felt like we were ready to launch. So we touch on some of the same subjects and we referenced that episode a number of times. Anyway, enjoy. Danielle Folkerts, welcome back.
Hi, good to be back.
Thank you. Danielle was my very first guest on the podcast way back when. I guess it was only a couple of weeks ago, right? And
yeah.
We've come full circle. We're talking about incels again.
I know.
Go ahead.
Well, crazy.
Yeah.
It's so crazy that we were talking about it a couple of weeks ago and now it's out there.
Yeah. And Bill Cosby we were talking about, actually. I thought about that today too. We were talking about Bill Cosby, I think, the first podcast as well. So interesting that all these things are coming up in the news right now. When we first talked, Danielle and I talked about incels because I had heard about them on another podcast and then went down the rabbit hole. And you guys can go down the rabbit hole too. If you Google incel tears, which is what I'm looking at right now, there's all the, it's a gold mine of just randomly selected, cringy articles written by incel men about women. And they're just abhorrent. Like they're so brutal. To read that anybody thinking, I think anybody in a reasonable state of mind would read these things and be like, you're batshit crazy. But there are people who think that way. I don't know. What do you think about it, Danielle?
Yeah. Well, even the art that I sent you earlier today, where it just kind of talked about the Toronto situation. And then it sounded like they had someone who was, I don't know if he's like, well, he is a member of this group and basically said, oh, you can't blame an individual, make that reflect on our whole group. But I thought, no, you're all like, your group doesn't stand for something amazing. Like,
yeah, it's not like
giving you, it's not helping you.
No, it's not doing you any favors, but it's also, when you look into the group in the first place, yeah, it's not, I mean, I'm sure there are a small minority of just sad virgins that are like just trying to get some help or whatever, trying to figure things out and want to date and don't know how, so they went looking for this. But I said this in episode 2 with Jaleesa. I think these online forums a lot of the times end up being just echo chambers for this type of and I read this in that article, actually. The lady kind of echoed what I was saying. They become online echo chambers for these ideas and just incubate like radicalized thought. So it just keeps pushing the envelope. Like they find a person that articulates their point of view and then everybody, it's almost like a cult. They just kind of, yeah, that makes sense. Okay. And then everybody goes along with it and advances these crazy ideas. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, it was lagging.
Yeah, no worries.
No, I was just going to say, it doesn't help that, you know, if that's their situation, that they kind of, put together this almost cult-like community online. I feel like that's the exact opposite way of, you know, if they genuinely wanted to meet women and get out there. And I understand that that's not always easy for people, especially if they're maybe not, they don't have the best social skills, but I think kind of grouping to and bashing, you know, women is the exact opposite way to get out of that kind of state of mind.
It's
not going to help you.
Yeah, no. And there's a sense of entitlement that these guys have, and like a playing a victim card that for anybody in life, that's just not like, take responsibility for your actions in your life. It's blaming everyone else for your problems. Like they're doing it to you, which is not, I mean, I think they're taking it far too personally. If you get shot down, it is personal, but it's not like, take responsibility for maybe why you were shot down in the first place. First of all, that's entirely their prerogative. If they want to shoot you down, you're not entitled to a date just because you ask. So, you know, take the loss and move on. But also take that opportunity to like look at yourself in the mirror and be like, okay, well, I wonder why she turned me down. Is it because of this? Because of this? Like maybe I need to brush my teeth more. Maybe I need to comb my hair, dress nicer, or whatever. And these incel guys are bitching because they feel like, I think, they shouldn't have to dress a certain way to get girls. Like they, you know what I mean? But you do. Yeah. But you do. Like you have to have a minimum standard or you know, people aren't going to be attracted to you. So it's insane. There's an article that I'm reading right now. I just want to read a little bit from it so the people listening can understand this. So this was written by an incel. The real issue with, and this is a quote from the article. It says, the real issue is that the advancement of makeup, the healthy at any size bullshit, feminism, and through social engineering, a lot of women are becoming detached from reality. The reason these incels aren't getting laid is because women with sexual market value equal to theirs use makeup to go from a 3 out of 10 to a 7 out of 10, which is false marketing, in my opinion, and should be a punishable offense, to fuck with men above their league. So then he's proposing rules to do away with this. And he's saying things like, number one, women are no longer allowed to wear makeup, i.e. falsely advertising their beauty and hence stopping them from banging guys above their league. Like, what reasonable person is looking at that and being like, oh yeah, no, that makes sense. I'm totally with you. That's so insane, man.
Well, and it's the premise that in his mind, you have to somehow, like when he says, your league, her league, what does that even mean, right? Yeah. Like, you don't have to, if to him a 10 and a 10 is like the most beautiful people that they can be, that's not how relationships work. People don't just match up the way, like, it's their personalities,
exactly.
It's their interests. Well, it's just assuming that it's all their physical looks, and that somehow that means that they're matching up. Like, he's just overlooking the majority of what would make couples great together.
For sure. Yeah. And I think at the core of it, what is his market value? You know what I mean? Like his perceived market value is presumably less than a 7 out of 10 or whatever, but he thinks he's at the heart of it entitled to whatever, which is completely false.
Yeah. And guys can wear makeup too. I mean, if he's all upset about throw on some makeup if he thinks that's gonna help him. Like,
that's the thing. They're hating the game and not the player, I guess. Like, just, you know, use your play your cards. Like, play what you've been given. And it's also ridiculous to think that ugly guys can't get girls, because look at celebrities. Jesus Christ, there's so many mismatched, weird, like Billy Bob Thornton and Angelina Jolie, perfect example.
Yeah.
That man is a troll, and he still got there, so you can
well,
do
it's
it,
just
man.
The premise that people, like, obviously obviously to him, it's all about looks, right? Mm-hmm. Which is probably one of the reasons why he's not with someone right now.
Exactly. Because
if that's all he's focusing on, and if he thinks that's the only reason why people are together, then that's why he's not with anyone right now, right? Like anyone that I know, that anyone knows that has been in a long or like healthy relationship, it's so much more than that. It's same interests. It's being a genuine, kind person, being honest, being able to talk. So I feel like they're just missing the point of what like an actually healthy relationship looks like what they need to do to get a relationship like that. Because if you're just going to be walking around and assuming that like you're so privileged that you are owed a relationship from someone that you don't even know, like it just, my mind blows. Like,
oh, I know. It's honestly hard to fathom. I'd be curious to see where they got that perspective, because it's obviously they all probably have their own ideas of what they're entitled to, but like I wonder if it's like romanticized from movies or TV or whatever, or like the fact that you hear that common saying, and I've seen this before, but like that nice guys finish last nonsense, that like just by virtue of them being nice, they should be getting women. And we talked about this on the first time we talked, that like I remember reading an article about that, and the writer of the article addressed this exact scenario where she was saying like being a nice guy on its own is just simply not enough. And if you're pissed that you're one of those nice guys that keeps finishing last, then there's probably something wrong with you. Like genuinely, and I mean, not to be hurtful, but like take a second and look at yourself and be like, being nice is like the baseline. So what else do you have to offer other than just being kind, which even like, well, asshole guys can be nice sometimes. So
yeah, and it's all about the intention too, right? Like if you're being nice because you think, oh, that's gonna get me laid,
exactly,
that's what girls want.
Yeah.
That's not being nice.
No, that's not being nice. That's manipulative.
Being nice because you genuinely care about that person and you're just, you have those good intentions.
Yeah.
That's great. That's what people want. And I think people can pick up really quick if you're being really honest with how, like, even if you're coming off and you're trying to be nice, if you're being like fake nice, people pick up on that pretty quick.
for sure. And they'll slide away from people. Like people have a pretty good bullshit detector, and I don't know, knowing people like that, not that I really do, but I would get creeped out by somebody like that really quickly and slide away from them, because I don't know, it gets gross me out. Just reading this stuff like grosses me out. I would not be friends with people like this. Or I would at least, if any of my friends expressed views like this, I would probably have a long chat with them about how ridiculous it is. Like, again, some of these rules. Women are only allowed to date men with equal sexual market value to them. State-mandated tests should be made, and everyone should get a sexual market value card ranging from 1 out of 10 to 10 out of 10, like an ID card. That is insane. That has to be satire, but it's not. People think this way. That's so preposterous.
Ugh. Yeah, there's actually, this is kind of, it's the same idea.
Ugh.
It's a little bit different. I'm not sure if you know, her name's Jenna Kutcher. She's got probably the most knockout podcast out there.
Oh, really?
So valuable. If you're like small business, creative photography, go listen to her. Okay. She's amazing. I followed her for the last couple years, and by far she gives the most value through her content, through her podcast, through her blog. But about 2 weeks ago, she went viral. She went completely viral. Her following went from, I think, like 100,000 to almost 500,000.
Wow.
And the reason why she went viral, she's pretty open about her life, and she's married, and she's got this gorgeous husband, and he's like he's super into CrossFit, so he's a really fit guy. He's a very good-looking, fit guy. She's beautiful, but she's a little bit bigger. She's got some curves.
Nothing wrong with that.
But what's crazy is that she made a post about, it was a photo of them together, and she was talking about comments, or she was calling out people that were making comments, because apparently she's been getting all these messages from, like, women, I'm sure men, that basically said to her, like, how did you get your husband? You don't deserve him. Like, he's a Mr. Six-Pack. Like, you don't deserve him. I don't
know. That's shitty.
Work. Just getting constant harassment. And it's because they're just different sizes.
Yeah.
And
hey, fuck you, people that say that. She made a
post about it and basically said, like, you know, I'm acknowledging this, but that's not what it's about. And she made a post about it, and it went completely viral. Like, all the major magazines and blogs around the globe picked it up. And it was all about just the fact that it's a curvy woman with a guy with a six pack. But they've been married for like 10 years.
Well, and like, and
it just blew my mind that had to even be something viral, because that to me shouldn't be. That's not. Yeah, I don't know. I just couldn't believe it. I thought that was kind of a silly reason, but her standing up was great. And I think that kind of has the same premise about even these guys who assume, you know, you need to same size to be together or anything like that. Like, it's just. It's ridiculous.
I mean, that's like a societal thing, though. Obviously, if it went viral like that, that's an important chin check for people to recognize that they even view things that way. Like, why shouldn't she deserve a super hot guy? Who gives a shit? I mean, they found each other, and obviously they enjoy each other's company. What does that matter to you? How does that affect your life? What size she is and what he looks like? Who gives a shit if they're happy? The fact that you would look at someone else's relationship and think that way says more about you than it does about them. Like, fucking look at your life. Good Lord. That's frustrating.
I have to think about the type of person that would go out of their way to message or comment on other people's feeds.
Ugh.
and take time out of their day.
Yeah, haters.
To just say things like that to people. It blows my mind, because I thought, you know what? Like, the size thing doesn't matter. And if you really got to know who they were and, like, what they represent, like, she is one of the most beautiful people inside and out.
And he probably sees that.
My heart hurts so much for her, because I thought that is just, it's great that, like, she gets to speak her message and share, like, her story, because she really did a lot of good things with it.
Yeah, but if she's doing that well on her...
About a podcast episode about it, about going viral over this.
Yeah, but if she's doing well and she's successful in life, then she's probably the type of person that reads that shit and then it just blows past her because she's a winner and she doesn't think like that, so it doesn't bother her. Like, those types of people...
Well, it does, though. It does.
You think so?
People can be brave and say it doesn't, but I think deep down, like, when people comment stuff, no matter how brave you are, it's still going to hurt at a time, because you think...
A little bit, I guess.
You know, that's not a nice thing to say.
No, I suppose. But you kind of, like we get... if we get negative reviews or whatever, if you hear a shitty comment, it's like, I empathize with the person commenting, but then I think, like, where are you at in your life that this is important to you right now, that you have to take time out of your day to write some shitty, nasty message to somebody? That's a terrible, like, if you're listening to this and you're the type of person that does that, stop it. Go do something positive with your life. Seriously, do something nice with your life. What are you doing? Texting a random stranger just to bring them down a notch. What's wrong with you? Go do something nice. That's so shitty.
Yeah.
But it's true. Like, the comment section on YouTube, first of all, it's a comedy goldmine, but it's also, like, hate-filled and just bitter. Like, ugh, those people. I don't know anybody like that. I don't know a single person, unless they're just lying to me. But if I asked all of my friends, hey, do you ever leave, like, shitty comments on YouTube or on somebody's picture? Nobody would say yes.
Yeah. Ugh.
But they're out there.
It's basement tricky dwellers. Business. People can screenshot that shit.
Yeah. It's a weird thing. And then, Bill Cosby today. If you haven't heard the news, people, Bill Cosby was convicted. He was retried now, and he has been convicted of indecent sexual assault, I believe, on all three counts. And he faces a maximum of, I believe, 10 years in prison, for each charge, although he probably wouldn't serve them consecutively. I think they said he would serve them likely concurrently, meaning if you don't know the system, concurrently means that he would serve, if he was sentenced to 10 years for each charge, you would think that's 30 years, but when they serve it concurrently, that means they just stack it. So he's effectively only serving 10 years, which is...
Really?
Yeah, it's a weird way that they do it, but it makes sense for first-time offenders if it's something minor rather than throw their entire mm-hmm. life away. But for a fucking monster like Bill Cosby, who is in all likelihood guilty multiple times over... of this type of like heinous assault, then he should probably just die in prison. But I'm honestly, fuck that guy. That's awful. There's no way he didn't do it. There's just simply no way. That's so awful. We were talking earlier about how
it's hard when you have that many people speaking up and speaking out, and it was over such a long period of time as
I remember when it first came out, you're like, because this is the very beginning of the Me Too movement, and when it first came out, people were like, hey, probably, you know, maybe we'll give him the benefit of the doubt because he's a celebrity or whatever. It's Bill Cosby, you know, it's America's whatever. He's the first, one of the first major black celebrities and blah, blah, blah. And then it was like, fuck, what was it, like 37 women came out, and you're like, Jesus Christ, there's no way he didn't do some of those. Even if he did one, you're like, okay.
Exactly, even just one
even
counts.
Just like, one, you should be in prison for the rest of your life.
When they first accused him, it was quite a while ago, was it
yeah,
not?
Yeah, it was like quite a while ago.
I can't remember.
It was, I believe, right around the time of, do you remember Gian Gomeshi from... what was it? It was a Canadian broadcast that Shad
Toronto,
is doing.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. And it was right around the same time that he got in trouble. I think it was just before... Gian Gomeshi got in trouble, I think, just before, and then Bill Cosby. And that was kind of the like House of Cards type thing where it all just came clumbling down there. But yeah, I remember that. And even the Gian Gomeshi situation was... It was a weird dice. I think if that had happened now, that guy would have been not that he wasn't, but he would be skewered now.
Mm-hmm. No, I think the fact that a lot of people are speaking out, especially in the last year, like hopefully it just creates an environment where guys like that will think twice, you know, and know that there's some like big consequences. Because I just think that now, you know, people can't get away with that kind
Not
of
now.
Stuff anymore.
Not
like,
now.
It's still happening, and, you know, people are, but I think that people are more proactive to get it out there and to communicate and share their stories, but, you know, if you think about when even Bill Cosby was doing all this stuff, like, no one had a clue. Like,
no.
I grew up, and
Bill
Cosby, and...
It was still very much a man's world at that time,
heard
too, so...
I don't know if it was the first account... My instinct was, no, they just, no, they would not, he wouldn't do that. And then when it just kind of kept coming and coming and coming, I thought, okay, all right, let's rethink.
And now the pendulum swung totally in that direction where, like, if somebody is accused, it's almost like we write them off. We're like, yeah, that he's probably guilty also. Because it's just, it's just so common now. Like, there's so many celebrities. I remember there was a time where for like 2 weeks straight, it was every other day was an accusation against some celebrity. And I wonder, like, I've had this conversation with a few people. I wonder how many people are just having their lives ruined over an accusation that isn't necessarily true. And that's unfortunate because that I think only hurts the real victims, the ones whose accounts are true, and then there's... Because there have to be false accusations, right? Like, there is probably a small percentage that are false accusations, and that's only going to be hurting the movement, I would imagine. But, that's just, I guess, casualties of a social shift, which is unfortunate. I've seen things on Twitter, too, where there are hardcore... I didn't even want to call them feminists, but there's people that are like hardcore that are saying, you know what, fuck the innocents. Like, if they got to go down too, that's just how it goes. And it's like, good God, that's aggressive. Yeah. Like, what if somebody accuses your brother or father or whatever. It's that's intense.
Yeah, it's super serious. It's
That's a very serious allegation.
It's hard because it's like the cry wolf, where you'll mm-hmm. see the magazine tabloids and you have like ex-girlfriends or the nannies, and they're like accusing different celebrities of different stuff. And I think because that's always out there, then when you actually see, and this is talking more about like the celebrities, these guys that are getting sued right now, where when those serious accounts actually come out and they're out in the news, I think sometimes we don't necessarily know right away what to believe, because we're always just bombarded with a lot of just fake shit, right? Like stories that aren't true at all. And then when the really serious ones come up, it's hard, because I think we have to discern and be like, okay, wait, is this actually happening? Or is this just like one of those crappy People magazine articles that was written by some random person and it's not actually true at all, right? And
so
I think when it comes to celebrities, it sometimes takes people a little bit of a while to actually figure out if this is happening or if it's not. And now with the Me Too movement, like, people are really speaking out, and I think people are appreciating that. But there's definitely this weird culture around, I think, just, you know, famous people and like the shit that they're up to. And then as like viewers, we just have to figure out, obviously there's like a court case that makes it different, but we just kind of have to figure out what is going on and then just use it as an example. And hopefully for other people, you know, they'll realize that they're probably not going to get away with shit like that anymore.
No, so. nor should they. I mean, they should be more heavily scrutinized and they should be held account if they're guilty and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it's tough. I can see how we hold these people up on a pedestal. So it's not hard for me to imagine how they're getting, like, how they've gotten away with it for so long, because they were in such positions of authority. Like, you look at somebody like, Harvey Weinstein. He was a gatekeeper. Like,
I don't really know him. I don't know his story very well, but all I know is that the fact that he's been doing this for like decades.
It was basically like bribery. And I mean, he would approach women who, like, he was Weinstein. The Weinstein brothers did like Miramax and all that. They were associated with Miramax, I believe. But they've produced like a bajillion movies. And he was so, so powerful in Hollywood. And from what I understand, he was essentially bribing women. Like, if you want a part in this movie, then you're going to have to do certain things. And he just got real creepy and disgusting and forced them to do things for roles. And he was a gatekeeper. And who at that time, 20 years ago, could you tell as an actress that would A, believe you, and B, would be even willing to go against him? Even now, it's like he's worth however many bajillion dollars and he has a team of lawyers. Like, that would still be intimidating now. Because I remember hearing stories from people in show business, and they were like, yeah, well, we knew this was happening. Like, we had heard stories about this happening, but nobody ever did anything because what are you going to do? It's Harvey Weinstein. It's insane. Do you think, though, that most people give the accused the benefit of the doubt? I'm not saying good or bad, but I feel like in the court of public opinion,
like his close friends?
No, just any, like the public, the general public, when they hear any stories, not just Harvey Weinstein, but any of these allegations, I feel like it is very difficult to be objective. Because as a male, when I hear that, I'm like,
yes and no. Like, it depends. Like, I feel like for someone like Bill Cosby, for example, if you grew up watching his show, you connected and loved the character that he was on TV, right? Yeah. That was a character. Mm-hmm. And then when you hear about the things that are actually happening years later in his real life, I think for people, when they hear about things that like that happening, if they've already kind of grew up with that character, what you think, no, I don't want to believe that. But it's dissociated because you're thinking of that character on the TV show.
And yeah, you're not thinking about him as a person.
Thinking like that man right there did that.
Yeah.
And I sometimes think that is what would maybe make a difference. Whereas if it's maybe a more unlikable character and we're talking about celebrities when I say characters, but if it's someone more unlikable, I think we believe it easier, right? It's weird.
I suppose, but even like Louis C.K. when that whole thing came out with him, his comedy, and I think it is important to separate those two things because I think you can still be a fan of his comedy because that's the thing. In Dave Chappelle's new stand-up special, have you seen it?
I've seen some of his new stuff, but I think he had a couple, right? Or was it a series?
There was two back-to-back, and then he released two more just recently. But the first two, in the very first one, he talks about Bill Cosby and this exact scenario where for many, many years, Bill Cosby was a very successful comedian. And it's hard to separate that now because he was so well known and made so many people laugh, but he was also a horrendous monster at the same time. So do you write him off as can you just be like, I hated all of his shit now? You know what I mean? Like you can't, it tarnishes it. You can't look at it the same. And then when you find out about somebody like Louis C.K., you're like, do you just throw it out? You know, do you just write him off? And kind of,
it's little things. Like, I think if someone has like a really strong, like if you say that, and then all that we can do is just not support them, right? Mm-hmm. Like not watch their shows or, you know, just do our best to not support them. That's really all we can do, right? And we're share the stories with other people. And that sucks too, because I know the Louis C.K., I've always been a big Louis C.K. fan. I'll totally admit that. But I know since the whole come out, I don't think I've watched any of his recent specials.
I don't think he's put anything.
I used to always, and now I'm not. So.
Yeah, he hasn't put anything out, obviously, since the allegation. Well, not allegations, since that came out, because he admitted to doing it.
Yeah, I was going to say he admitted it, right?
Oh yeah, and issued an apology and take it for what it is, I guess. I don't know whether you accept it or not, but I don't know. It's different, and it's each case feels different too, because there's some of them, is such a touchy subject, but like some of the allegations, there is a severity difference, right? Like Bill Cosby's is criminal and incredibly severe. Whereas, and I'm not to say that Louis C.K.'s isn't, but some of the other ones where it seems like it was just a guy shooting his shot, it didn't work out, and then the woman claims many, many years later that she was traumatized by it or whatever. You know what I mean? Like a guy went in for a kiss, it didn't work out, he got slapped, and then the woman was saying, well, it made me feel this way, and then they drag his name through the mud. And I'm not thinking of anyone in particular, but that type of scenario being dragged through the mud or dragged into or lumped into the same scenario as Bill Cosby or the same arena as Bill Cosby is, I don't know, that's a lot, right?
It is. It's a hard subject because, like, I agree, like, where there's different severities, but at the same time it's all consent too, right?
True.
If it was a case where I went in for a kiss and she slapped me, like, okay, if that is truly all that happened, I get
for
that
sure.
But I feel like if a woman really felt that, like, if that was a traumatic experience and that's been something that's been with her for a few years, obviously there's more things at play, right?
Sure.
Like maybe he came off very aggressively. I just always think, you know, if for a woman or for a man, that there's some trauma there with an experience, whether anything happened or not, it's all with the intention and how it played out. And I think sometimes, like, especially when it's just in tabloids or on the news, like, we never hear the full story. We don't actually know how things went down and what went down.
That's so important because... In say that scenario that we're talking about, is that worthy of bringing it public? Like, for sure, reconcile with the individual that this happened with, but is that something that necessarily needs to be brought to the media, ruin this person's life over, you know what I mean? If it was, if it was benign enough that there were no criminal charges necessarily, like there were no laws broken, but there was trauma, I feel like it's just contextual, right? Like if you can reconcile with that person without destroying their life, I don't know. Like, obviously there was...
I think it was probably a lot more serious. Just, if it's hard because you have to kind of validate what people's experiences are.
Exactly. And, I'm not invalidating anyone's... Obviously, we're talking about a hypothetical situation, just so we're clear again.
No, for sure. It's tough. Like, it's a hard situation. Yeah. And if for him, like, obviously him speaking out about it, I think he probably had enough guilt and concern about maybe his actions and what happened that he thought, like, you know what, it's better to own up and like admit what I did than
unfortunately not until not after he got
about it, and then her talking about it with other people, and then people hearing that and then spinning it in a different direction, because
well, he got in front of it once it was ready to come out,
stories up and take them in different directions. So
I think people have a harder time swallowing the Louis C.K. thing because he didn't get in front of it until after it was clear that it was going to blow. Whereas, like, if he had done it once and then been like, and then admitted without anybody saying or accusing him, if he had been like, hey, this is what I did, I'm really, really sorry, I think people would have been still like going for his head, but like more forgiving. But you can't... You can't have people accuse you and then be like, yeah, I'm really sorry that I did that and hid it for all those years. That's not how it works. And you know what? I remember a long time ago, Roseanne Barr actually accused him quite a while ago, like a couple of years ago. And he denied it and denied it and denied it and said she was crazy and nothing like that ever happened. And I never saw anything about that in the media when the allegations finally proved to be true. And I was curious what happened about that. But yeah, she wasn't wrong. She was like, no, there's a few women that have been accusing him for years. And I remember reading that. And I was one of those people that was like, no, come on, this is bullshit. Because she described the exact scenario that he took his dick out and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, that is fucking insane. Who would do that?
Yeah.
And then it turns out it was true. Shitty.
Shitty. So shitty. God. It doesn't look good.
What a creepy, disgusting, weird thing to do.
Just keep it in your pants,
God.
This is
an uplifting podcast, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I hope everyone just feels super refreshed and
rejuvenated after this. Not triggered at all. I apologize if there was any triggers there. We're just having a discussion.
And this is the thing, is that a lot of these things are on the news this week, and so it's just interesting to see things unfold. And
And if my opinions trigger you in any way, or Danielle's, or if you have concerns about anything, please DM us, and you can be a part of the conversation, and I'll include it in future episodes. We can start a discussion about it, or if you want to include your experiences or explain those to enlighten me, I'm always open to that stuff. I want to learn. That's the point of this podcast, is to have conversations and learn. So,
it's tough stuff, but it's good to chat with people.
I think it's worth having these discussions,
too, right?
Yeah. It's worth having discussions like this, because that's how you kind of advance the knowledge base around the subject. That's how. This is how, like, young men will come to understand what they're doing wrong. Like, that's why I think as far as the pendulum is swinging in this direction and how it's reactionary and sometimes I think probably over the top a little bit, it's probably a good thing. Like, it'll balance out eventually, but before it does, I think the point has to be made that there are a lot of guys acting shitty and I don't know, it's going to correct itself, but yeah, you have to learn first. So it's good. It's definitely a good thing to do, to be happening, I should say. You know what else I was looking into on the way home? I was listening to, I was listening to another podcast and they were talking about scat music. Do you know what scat music is?
I do. I feel like it's like a high high school thing, though.
It was. But it was like, it was popular in the mid-20s, I think, 1920s. And it was where you essentially just make nonsense noises with your mouth and sing, use your mouth like an instrument. And then I paused the podcast and I YouTubed Scatman John. You remember him? Remember that song?
I recognize it, but I can't remember.
You would know the song if you heard it. It was, his main hit was Scatman in 1995. Okay. I'm sure some of our listeners remember it. And it was, oh God, I wish I could play the song for you. You'd know it for sure. Let me see if I can bring it up. One sec. I'm going to just amuse yourselves, everyone. Bear with me.
I'm just looking at, like, Scatman. What is this?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Ski-bop, boop,
duck, there it is. Yeah. That was Danielle scatting, everyone.
I know who this is.
Okay, here. Just so the listeners can know, I'm going to... Here it is. So that is the Scatman John. So I Googled or I YouTubed that because I hadn't heard that song in probably 15 years. And if you haven't heard it, do yourself a favor and YouTube Scatman John. It's fantastic. He had like 3 hits, I think, but that song went viral in 95. And it was literally like top of the charts. And it was incredible because I was researching it actually when I got home. I thought it was mind blowing because he was like 53 when he finally made it big.
Yeah, it says I'm looking. Born in 42.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, 53 when he hit the charts. That's insane. And also, he was born with like a debilitating or developed a debilitating stutter, like a very severe stutter. And he addresses it in that song. He's like, I don't know. There's a lyric about him stuttering all the time, but not when he scats. Everybody's saying that the scat man stutters, but does and never stutter when he sings. And I don't know. It's a pretty uplifting song, actually.
Very
I think
cool.
The world needs more of that.
Very cool.
Yeah. So I'm going to...
Music therapy. It's awesome.
Yeah. I'm gonna edit this podcast, and I'm going to play like 15 seconds of Scatman right now. Yeah, it'll be, and then I'll play us out to Scatman John. That'd be wicked.
Love it.
Yeah. So, what else have you guys been up to? Oh, one thing I wanted to ask you was how you got into art. What is the earliest age you remember doing art and like falling in love with it?
We're just gonna switch gears here, guys.
Yeah, we are. I felt like we had to get off the real hot button issues.
Always. Yeah. Like, since I was a kid, that was pretty much all I was doing was drawing. And that was, I think, going through school, I was always a kind of struggle. I was always a great, like, I always studied really hard and worked hard and got great to decent grades. Mm-hmm. But
great to decent on a sliding scale.
I'm really good at this. And this is all I want to do.
Was it always visual arts?
Yeah, mostly like growing up, it was like drawing, a lot of drawing.
Yeah. What did you draw?
I would design outfits. I'd do interior design. I'd draw layouts and blueprints. And
really? Interesting. Like
journal.
Technical designs.
Yeah. It's funny because now, like, I went into painting and I'm a painter, but when I was a kid, I actually didn't really paint that much. It was a lot of drawing.
Cool. I used to draw a lot of, what did I draw a lot of? I drew a lot of like the suns in the corner with the sunglasses on, you know? You draw the little sunshine in the corner, looking down on the whole scene.
I'm at Queens and I teach a teens class on Thursdays. And one of my students last week was painting those little, do you remember like in high school drawing those little S's that look like eights?
Yep.
And you connect the dots?
Yep.
She was drawing those all over her paper and I was having like this severe flashback.
Oh God, yeah. Just even mentioning it, I'm like 10th grade math class.
School, like, oh my God, my binders used to be covered in that stupid symbol.
Yeah. It's actually what I get in my head is what I'm trying to spit out is the Slipknot symbol. Do you ever listen to Slipknot?
I know who they are, yeah.
Yeah, if you look up their like logo, The S is exactly that. They just ripped it off, basically.
Yeah.
Somebody owes somebody some money for that.
Yeah. No, so I just grew up and I always wanted to go to art camps and I did a lot of, I guess I did a little bit of everything. Pretty much every excuse I had, I was taking art classes. And then in high school, I was, my school was very like, what are you going to do after high school? And my dad was my principal and my mom ran her own business. So my parents were like very hard workers. And so in my head, I'm like, oh my God, okay, I have to go do something and I need to know right away. And I was actually considering marine biology forever. I still think that'd be amazing. Hence why I paint all the coral reefs.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
you seem super into the ocean.
Was really the one thing I knew without a doubt was the thing that I wanted to learn more about and practice and share with people. And so I just applied and I got into art school. I started at like, I was in college and I was 17 years old. Like I couldn't even go to the college bar yet. Within my first week, I was like, yep, nope, this is what I'm doing for the rest of my life.
Really? So, wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Huh. I had no idea. Even at 18, my first time through college, I decided on graphic design. And even then I was like, this is hard. Like, this is way too hard. This is not what I was prepared for. Yeah. I still to this day, I'm not like 100% on what I'm sure I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life. I probably won't be the cafe. I'm too eclectic for that. I'm all over the place. I like doing new things.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I'm the same way. Like, I would say I always know I want to do art, but that's like the most, that's like saying
that's broad though. That's good. Like, there's a lot you can do with that.
It's so broad, but I think that that's great too, because it's given me like such an outlet to do just a ton of stuff.
Yeah. It's a good base, but you can do a lot. So did you, when you picked that program to go into in university or college, was everyone in your family like supportive of that or?
Yeah, they were. Yeah they were pretty supportive. Like I went into it knowing, I always wanted to do, and I probably will do it eventually, but I always wanted to get my master's to teach as well. I also had applied after I finished my Bachelor of Fine Arts. I wanted to go and get my teaching degree as well, because I always knew, like, I liked teaching, I liked small business. It was kind of like this weird mixture of both of my parents that I just picked up, and it was great because basically once I started going through school, I had the opportunities to just start teaching, like, right away. Just go into my dad's school, go to schools that I'd attended, and just start teaching art. And I didn't really know what I was doing, but I had always just grown up around teachers and been really close to them. And so picked it up pretty quick, and I just kept going with it, and I loved it. And so I've just kind of evolved from that, but I always kind of knew that it was going to be along the lines of education, art.
And what did you do?
Didn't know how I was going to get there.
What did you do when you finished? When you finished university, so you're like, where was your first job post graduation?
Post graduation.
Was it in the arts? Was it doing what you wanted to do?
After officially graduating from my fourth year, I moved. So I was in school in Calgary, and then I moved home and worked at home for a bit. I moved back to Calgary, and then I was working at this giant art store. Mm-hmm. It's like a privately owned art store, and it ended up being such a good job to have, especially just out of my degree, because I basically had access to all the materials in the world, different brands.
Sure. Yeah.
Different types of mediums that I'd never even used. And I actually feel like I learned more about art supplies and art in that regards working a year in an art store than I did in all 4 years of art school.
Like, well, yeah, it's that practical.
Different types of paint, different brands.
That practical
and even
experience.
Experimenting. Like, it was awesome.
That's wicked. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then I also started to be able to do more teaching and demos. So basically throughout my degree, I just was doing marketing. markets. I was teaching, and then I was working at my mom's shop, and then I was always all over the place. Like, even now, I feel like every job that I've had in the last 10 years has been a job that I can kind of manage while doing my art. Like, yeah. it has to balance and support each other.
For sure.
So that's been the goal.
when you were doing, when you were working at the art store, is that when you, because you said you were kind of doing stuff on the side, like doing the markets and that, is that when you kind of figured you were going to start working for yourself as like an entrepreneur and doing your own thing? Or yeah, like, when did that start?
I feel like the whole entrepreneur, like small business thing really has only been this weird movement as of like the last few years. I know it's always existed, but those like words weren't really in my mind, even though I'd already been doing it for like 5 or 6 years. Like I never thought to myself,
my cat, sorry about that.
I'm an entrepreneur. I just didn't really think that way. But basically from 17, like I was in the studio painting, and I still remember like someone coming up and they're like, I can buy that. And I thought, I guess, yeah. I mean, that's part of the game. So then started going to markets. And it was like, this was also before, like now there's markets everywhere. It's so trendy. It's oversaturated. But back
there's,
in the
sorry,
day,
there's
like,
what
and,
everywhere?
I shouldn't say that. It's not like years ago, but it was like almost 10 years ago.
What, sorry,
that
what did you say?
Scene
there's
was
there's
so different.
Markets
like,
everywhere?
It didn't really exist the way it does now. Hmm. So it was really trial and error. Social media didn't have the presence that it did back that time. And so I was just figuring everything out and learning along the way, and just kind of kept building product. And while I was in school and in Calgary, I got picked up by a gallery in Calgary. So I actually, at the time, I was painting like giant, giant paintings, and I ended up being able to sell my work downtown Calgary, which was really neat.
Amazing.
And that was like its own little world. And then I did markets back home. So I was always just doing a lot of different things, always. Like my pastime was working. I didn't really just hang out, relax. It was like, oh, okay, I'm going to get to work today.
Well, that's probably your parents, as
you said.
Only
up until a couple years ago did I realize that I'm like, oh, this is now like a thing that I can tangibly say, yeah, I'm like an entrepreneur, but I've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, I had that actually the same attitude towards it. I had that discussion with Jaleesa on episode 2 when we were talking about entrepreneurship, and like I still now don't feel like an entrepreneur. Like,
yeah.
And I don't know if that's like a self-worth or confidence thing, but, it's a weird feeling. I didn't even feel like I'm adulting, you know what I mean? But yeah, mm-hmm. I'm sure people would say otherwise, but.
Well, I think there's a difference because like, and I would say like, we're both like that. And a lot of people are like that where you maybe don't think that way because you're not doing it to be an entrepreneur. You're doing it because it's something you love. Like just do art. Like I do it however I can and it looks like however it's going to look. Whereas it's so interesting because I feel like I've had these conversations with a few people like recently where it maybe someone a little bit younger, they're coming out. I'm like, oh, like, what do you have on the go? What do you want to do? And they're like, I want to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah. No,
like,
that's true.
Oh, what is that? Like,
what does that mean to
you?
Yeah,
what are
exactly.
You gonna do? And they're like, I don't know yet. And I think, oh boy.
Yeah.
That's a different way of looking at it, because I think in my mind a really successful entrepreneur is someone who, and I guess you could argue this, whatever, but is that you're doing something that you love so much, because it's hard being an entrepreneur and you're going to lose a lot, you're going to gain a lot, but
yeah.
I feel like if it's something that you really, really love, you just do it because you can't imagine not doing it, and then you kind of end up being an entrepreneur. Whereas
right.
It's very different where, like, I think if people that come out to sometimes these marketing programs and they're very structured and very organized, and that's amazing. And I wish that that would have been me starting off, because I probably would have, it would have just been a little bit different. But I feel like if you just do something and you love it a lot, that, yeah, entrepreneurship is almost like the second thing. That's just what ends up happening because
and I feel
you're doing
like,
what you love.
I feel like to say that I'm an entrepreneur is almost, it's like pretentious a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Like if someone were to ask me what I did for a living, I would never be like, I'm an entrepreneur. Yeah. I would be like, I play with cats and I sling coffee for a living. That's it. It's not, yeah. Ugh. Yeah. But, when I was, it's, as you say, it's like a lot of hard work. I think that's the biggest thing that, that people, I don't know, that I think separates actual entrepreneurs from people that just kind of want to be a business owner or whatever, the appreciation for the amount of work that goes into it. Like unless you are doing it, you just, it's hard to relate. I had a phone call from a girl today at the cafe who wanted to do her own thing. And I would never discourage anybody that wants to do that because I'm the last person that should. I have zero experience by all rights to like open a cafe or own any kind of business. I have no experience doing any of that stuff. But I did it and it was just genuinely just sheer force of will, like hard work. Totally. And I think anybody is capable of doing that. But you just, you have, and I told her this, like, it's a lot of work. You just have to kind of take it day by day. And I gave her some resources and blah, blah, blah. But I could tell she was like overwhelmed. And I was like, I know it sounds like a lot, but like, don't focus on the whole mountain and climbing it. Yeah. You just focus on like the little steps day to day, focus on what you need to get done today. And then eventually you'll be where you want to be. And, but it is so much goddamn work. And
nothing's instant, right? Like,
no,
I feel
nothing.
Like it's the same way. I'm excited because I'm talking at, I think it's May 10th. There's like a small business event by Working Culture and the Kingston Art Council. And I'm going to be on a panel there with a bunch of small business owners. Sweet. And we're going to be talking about starting your own small business. And I think that's redundant. Great because it's so, like, those things didn't exist for me 10 years ago. And I would have loved to be able to sit down and like see the type of people that are doing really cool things in the community and hear about their journey. But
yeah, I'd be curious.
There's also something very misleading about just sitting there for, you know, 3 hours and saying like, this is how you do it because it's so much work and there's so much failure, and like self-doubt and just like not knowing what you're doing. And
The life of an entrepreneur is
to look at the finished
stress.
Product, right? And, just be like, how did you do that?
It's the average person just doesn't know, man. Like any of my friends could tell you, like the stress level that you go, it's a roller coaster. And I remember reading just before I did this that entrepreneurs are like a unique brand of people that leave 40-hour work weeks to work 80-hour work weeks. And that's pretty accurate.
Totally. And
it's
absolutely.
People always ask me like how I do it. And it's not like that my passion wakes me or anything hokey like that. It's just that like, it's fun. And when you're your own boss, you like want to be there. And honestly is I prioritize sleep. So as long as you get enough sleep, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm not cranky most of the time.
Oh, it's crazy to me. Like if I think of like every job that I've ever had that was like, that I'm like an employee, it's always like, okay, just tell me, like, I'll work my ass off, but like, I don't want to have to be there 15 minutes longer than have to be. Whereas, like, with when it comes to like art making and like markets and like workshops, I'll just be like, oh, I can squeeze 15 hours in this week and do this stuff and be totally exhausted and not have a break and then look at my schedule and think, I don't know when I'm going to sleep next.
Yeah.
But, I don't even think about it.
It's a unique trait of.
It's just, I need to do it.
It's a unique trait of entrepreneurs, I think, that results-oriented stuff kind of drives you. Like for me, the part of the reason why I work so hard at the cafe is that your hard work is tangibly rewarded. Like you can see it. Whereas if you're working for somebody else and you work your ass off, chances are you might get a pat on the back from an immediate supervisor, but nobody really cares. But you can, if you do it for, when you're doing it for yourself, you go that extra mile, you see the results. It's obvious, like it's on paper. You can see it in the sales. You can see it in the engagement on social media or whatever, it's so much more rewarding.
Right? Just having people share their experiences, and it's awesome. Like it's very rewarding. Like if you stick with something that you're passionate about, it is very rewarding, and you need to like savor those moments and literally screenshot them, because then like in the next month, if you're having a crisis, then you can just scroll back and be like, oh yeah, this is why I do it.
I know. I have to remind myself that every day, just to like savor the small victories, because there are days when it's slow at the cafe and you're like, oh God, I've ruined my life.
Yeah.
And again, my friends could tell you it's, you know, it can happen, but yeah, I try and think of like how far I've come and appreciate just the journey of it, no matter what happens. And, and be happy with the progress that I've made so far. It's been a fun ride. It's been fun.
Yeah. Totally.
Oh, neat.
It's a good time. I feel like it is. It's easier in a sense that if you've been in it for a while, like that you can look back and appreciate it.
Yeah.
Whereas in those few years, especially when you're just starting,
it is terrifying because
you don't have anything to measure any sort of success.
Yeah.
That is shitty. But
yeah, you don't know what you don't know.
Good decade and then counting, I feel like it's great, because you can start to measure your success and then see like how far you've come, how far businesses come, and the relationships that you've made. And
I look back at like the growth that I've made personally in the last year, and it's just insane. Where I was as a person when we first opened, and even just in the first few months of opening that cafe, and the level of stress that I was under, oh my God, it was insane. And now where I'm at, and I couldn't explain it unless you've done it, but I'm a totally different person than I was a year ago. Mm-hmm. It's wild. It's neat. Mm-hmm. It's a neat experience. So, you know.
Yep.
Get out there and do it. If you have any inkling to be an entrepreneur, figure it out and do it, because it's fun.
Just find the thing that you can picture loving, even when you don't want to do it, and even when you hate it, but you'll keep doing it.
Yeah, and slow progress is progress, so just stick with it. It's cool.
It's a good journey, and I feel like it is great for people starting out now, because there's just so many resources out there. Like it's incredible to me that even like podcasts and like I think I listen to probably 4 to 5 hours of podcasts every single week now, and for like the last year, and I think I'm getting so much information in my brain.
Oh, I know.
This is amazing. Like I didn't even do this 2 years ago. This is amazing.
And podcasts to me are so valuable, because you latch on to, like I have a cycle of podcasts that I listen to, but you latch on to ones that kind of improve your outlook on life in general. Like I listen to a couple that give me access to a world that I wouldn't have otherwise have access to, and viewpoints of people that are genuine like winners that have positive attitudes and businesses of their own, and it's inspirational to listen to their journey and see how well they're doing. And I honestly take like marketing ideas and just business ideas from those types of people. And they're not even necessarily related, but just like their attitude towards life. You kind of adopt that just from, I guess, what is from osmosis, just from listening to it, you kind of start to absorb it, which is really interesting. I love listening to podcasts.
Yeah, I know. I still remember like probably, I don't even know if it was like 6 months ago, and you had messaged me something about a podcast, and I was like, oh, I listen to podcasts too.
Yeah.
So it's fun to see now that we're talking.
Finally doing it. Yeah. It's been a idea of mine for a while. Actually, Taylor and I, it's been an idea of ours for a while. We've always been saying, just because of our dynamic, that we should have like a YouTube channel or whatever, because we're so ridiculous together. And we finally kind of got together and started it.
Podcasting is amazing, because you can like be in your pajamas. Just chill on your couch.
Yeah, and
you don't have to do the lighting and the
and like for me, I love talking to people. So people like yourself. And then coming up in May, I've got my friend Nick who does security at the casino. So he's him and I are going to have some wicked stories to talk about. And then I was contacted recently by a therapist, a woman out of Montreal and Kingston, who I'm pretty excited to have on the podcast. It should be interesting to talk to her. A few other guests, friends of mine, and Taylor's going to be back on. I think Taylor and I are going to do a semi-regular segment of mini episodes that are just going to be addressing like current events, which should be fun. Talking about local news and because things like this happen with the Toronto incident. By the way, we're recording this. If this doesn't get released until Monday, we're recording this on Thursday night. If it seems like we're talking about this late or whatever, we're recording this Thursday night, and I'm probably going to release this early, but we'll see. So anyway, yeah, when things like this happen, like the Toronto incident, it would be awesome if I could just call up Taylor and be like, hey, let's get on the mic and talk about this, because it'll be fun. Just to bring it back for a second, so when you were studying art, because I don't know how an art degree, you graduated with fine arts, right? Degree in fine arts?
Yeah.
So obviously you must have done some courses on like the history of art and things like that.
Yeah, lots of art history.
Yeah, what was that? Like, I remember I studied one course of art history, and I actually really enjoyed it for the most part, because I've always been into the symbolism. Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy it?
Oh, I was like a 99% average.
Oh, wow. Wow. Nerd.
I don't know what. Like, it's funny because I actually don't remember things very well, I'll be mm-hmm. honest. But if I'm studying and I'm, like, taking a class, I will just... Like, I loved art history. Mm. I love to travel. I love to go to galleries. I love to visit, like, historical sites. So getting to finally, like, take a variety of different courses all with art history, I was eating that shit up. I loved it.
Renaissance art was always mind-blowing to me because mm-hmm. when you read, like, their descriptions, the geometry, the symbolism was always... just so fascinating to me, like that something round might symbolize a pregnancy or a birth or whatever.
Colors and everything.
Like, yeah, and how meticulously they were planned. Like, again, the geometry, when they overlay it with, what is it, like with angles and the way the painting was oriented. And you're like, holy shit, man, this was like, 400 years ago or whatever it was that they painted this, if not more, and they were brilliant with it. Like, it's mm-hmm. so impressive to me. Same with, I mean, that's part of the reason why all my tattoos are like Japanese folklore art, just because of the stories behind them. I find them so fascinating.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, super no, it's good. If you have not been to the Agnes and they've seen their gallery, they've got original Rembrandts there, right?
Oh, like, wow.
They're amazing.
Wow, yeah.
They've always got good shows. They're doing a turnover right now, and I love going in there because I kind of think, like, this is amazing. This is just in Kingston.
Yeah, that is to have original Rembrandts.
Sometimes it feels really small, and then I'm like, this gallery is amazing.
Yeah. Have you ever been to the Louvre?
I have, yeah.
Isn't that... Yeah. It's... insane. If you haven't been there, book a ticket, go right now. You could spend days there. It's humongous. I only spent it was like half a day because I was only I don't know why I spent so little time there, but I remember basically sprinting from one famous piece to the next. But to see like the Venus de Milo or whatever, where it's those statues that are hand carved and still preserved to this day, and you're just looking at the detail, it's to me it's like staggering. I'm sure some people are like boring, but
it's cool. It's so amazing crazy. To see it in person, especially after you're like kind of desensitized to that stuff just in movies and in books and pictures, and then to actually be there and see the original, it is pretty mind-blowing.
It's incredible.
When I graduated, I had got a scholarship to go travel and study. So I went to Italy and I like lived in the countryside in Tuscany.
Wow.
Basically just painted every day and studied art history. And went
what are
to,
you,
like,
a movie?
I went to Louvre for the first time when I was in high school, but then I went back to Italy because I was like, this is my favorite place in the entire world. I need to be here. And so I went on
back. Thank you for saying that. I agree.
Just stayed there and studied with an artist there and just got to basically paint the Tuscany countryside. Jesus. And then he was just like this fountain of knowledge regarding art history and like the local history there. And
this is literally a movie.
I just kind of drowned myself in like all things art history. Yeah. But I still dream about that part of my life.
It's an indie film.
Every day it was like the best time of my life.
No doubt. Yeah. I can picture it with like just no sound and a little bit of music playing in the background. This is a movie. Mm-hmm. Your life
lots
is a movie.
Of wine and cheese.
Yep, for sure. I found Italy to be one of the most incredible places I've ever been to. Mm-hmm. I would love to go back. But yeah, I remember spending time in Rome, and I've always been like a student of history. I find history very fascinating. But for that reason, I think Rome is like hands down one of the most interesting places I've ever been, because I spent about 2 weeks there and it's just simply not enough time. Like there's so much to see and do, and it's so humbling to be in those places when you're like, oh, this is 2,000 years old. Mm-hmm. That's fucking crazy. Yeah. Like, this was around in biblical times. It's so nuts, allegedly, because who knows if that's real. Sorry, religious people.
It's
yeah, it's pretty crazy to stand, and especially in Italy, like modern Rome, you're standing in a structure that's 2,000 years old, and there are modern buildings right beside it that have been built in the last 15 years. It's so crazy.
It's such a crazy contrast.
Yeah.
Well, and it's funny because, like, I'm from the West Coast, and there's not a lot of history there. There's like beautiful mountains and trees, and that's old. But coming to Kingston, I just for if you're thinking about Canada, like Kingston, Montreal, Quebec City, visiting those places, it does blow my mind. Because I'm like, oh my God, there's so much history here. It's amazing. And I appreciate that and I love it. And I'm trying to just like make the most of it because out west, that's just not a thing.
Yeah.
But then when you go to Europe.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I laughed when you said that.
This is a joke.
Yeah. I laughed when you said that because it's like there's history in Canada, but it's like six generations max. And then that's the beginning of our history. But you go to like Belgium. And there were bars in Belgium that are twice as old as our country. That's crazy. So crazy. They're like 300 years old. It's wild. It's a neat place. Go to other places in the world, people. It'll teach you things.
Mm-hmm. I know I talked with someone today and they were like, I've never been on a plane and my heart hurts because I'm like, no.
Yeah, go places. You need to.
Like, get on a plane and go somewhere.
It'll change your life. It'll change your perspective to know that there are other people in the world besides Canadians. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's important for everybody to travel at least once in your life. Go somewhere with culture shock.
Yeah, it's so worth it. It's such a, it's just, you can't put a price on it.
There's very few people that I know.
Go somewhere completely different.
Yeah. There's very few people that I know that have traveled and come back and been like, I'd never do that again. I don't know anybody that
exactly.
says
That's
that.
Not a very common thing.
No. Oh, man. It has been over an hour. Would you like to wrap this up?
Yeah.
All right. Let's do it. Well, Danielle, tell people where they can find you and where you're going to be. Do you have any shows coming up or workshops or...
Yeah, I don't know when you're playing this, but I do have a show this weekend at the base. They've got their craft fair. And I just had my class at the Cat Cafe last night, which was amazing.
Sold
and
out.
A blast. Yep. And we're going to do it again. I'll share the dates later. We have to nail down some dates, but
probably in June, right?
It was so much fun.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It was nothing but good feedback. It was awesome.
Yeah, and then people can find me at DanielleFulkerts.com or The Traveling Artisan on Facebook and Instagram, and Traveling Artisan Workshops for more if you're interested in the workshop side of stuff. And yeah, I'm all over Kingston. I'm at the TED Center, so people can always reach out if they have questions or wanted to take a class or anything like that.
Wonderful. Danielle, thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Fun. You guys know where to reach me at S. Fardella. on Instagram, or you can find me at the cafe, or you can send me a DM at the podcast. Next week, we will have Taylor. Jesus, that is my cats. They are going ham right now. Sorry for the commotion, folks. That is Prim and Murray just having a wrestling match. And with that, if you have any concerns about the things that we talked about on this podcast, because it was a bit of a triggering one, I assume, send me a message and we'll talk about it. Thanks, and we'll see you next week. Bye, guys.
Bye. I'm a scout.